From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Tuesday's briefing at the U.S. State Department covered a variety of hotspots in the world, from Algeria to Venezuela, and many spots in between. This is State Department spokesperson Robert Palladino speaking at the State Department in Washington on Tuesday.
Thank you. The United States applauds the people of Venezuela for their actions to create a peaceful democratic transition and congratulates Interim President Juan Guaido on his successful diplomatic efforts in the region and safe return to Venezuela. However, we have noticed in news coverage that some outlets are incorrectly referring to Juan Guaido as the opposition leader or the self-proclaimed president. Neither is correct. A few basic facts. The National Assembly remains the only legitimate and democratically elected institution in Venezuela. Juan Guaido was elected president of the National Assembly on January 5th, 2019. And on January 10th, Maduro usurped the presidency. Therefore, the president of the National Assembly, and relying on Venezuela's constitution, as president of the National Assembly and relying on Venezuela's constitution, Juan Guaido became interim president of Venezuela on January 23rd. Millions of Americans and more than 50 countries recognize Juan Guaido as interim president of Venezuela. He is appointed and credentialed ambassadors to international organizations and the United States and numerous other democratic nations and other democratic nations. So to refer to Juan Guaido as anything but interim president falls into the narrative of a dictator who has usurped the position of the presidency and led Venezuela into the humanitarian, political, and economic crisis that exists today. The international community must unite behind interim President Juan Guaido and the Venezuelan National Assembly and support the peaceful restoration of democracy in Venezuela. That's it for the top.
Let me get this straight. You're complaining because news outlets are calling him by a title that you don't think that he...
Not a complaint. Pointing out. Just trying to correct.
Well, it sounds like a complaint to me, and that seems pretty weak sauce. I don't understand what your problem is. I mean...
He's the interim president,
you consider him to be the interim president, and as you say, 50 other countries outside of recognize him as the interim president. But there are more than 190 members of the United Nations. So your 50 countries is not even close to half of that. Is that correct?
We are supporting the Constitution of Venezuela and the people of Venezuela. We're supporting the Venezuelan people here. And so the United States, it's the time to act in support of democracy. And
news coverage of calling him the legitimate leader, the president, is going to encourage more countries to recognize.
We don't want to feed into rhetoric of the current dictator.
Okay. Very briefly, the policy question. Yesterday, you guys got a letter from three House committees, once again bringing up the request for to either speak with the interpreter who was present during President Trump's meeting with President Putin in Finland, or notes and communications regarding that. I saw the answer that you provide, the department provided yesterday, which is basically we got the letter, but we're not going to talk about our cooperation with a different agency. I would like to know, because when Heather was up here, when this first came up last year, immediately after the summit, she didn't really give a full answer. So I want to know, is it the department's practice policy to make available to relevant congressional committees, its staff, interpreters or the interpreter's notes or whatever to is it standard practice, or is this something that has been denied in the past, or has it never come up?
Matt, it's a fair question, but I just don't know the answer to that today. I don't have that answer for you, but I will get you an answer on that.
Check to find out. Yeah. I'd just like to know if it's ever, if the building in its vast history, yeah, has, if there's precedence for for agreeing to a request like,
right,
this, or if there's precedence for denying.
I believe the answer is no, but I want to look into it. Okay, before I give you
no, as in it's never been asked for.
It's not been brought.
So this is uncharted territory.
That is that. I want to look into it and get you a proper answer. Okay. Yeah. Please, Rich. You had a question.
Venezuela. Okay.
Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sure.
The measure announced yesterday in regards to property in Cuba. How much does the Cuban government support of the Venezuelan government, or one of them, how much does that play into the secretary's decision?
I'd say quite a bit. I mean, Cuba's support for the Maduro regime has been significant. And therefore, part of our overarching policy is to squeeze Cuba as appropriate. We would like to see democracy returned to Venezuela.
One quick follow-up.
Sure.
You have sanctioned, or the United States has sanctioned, the state oil company. Is there a concern that you are sort of running out of options to press the Maduro regime, and there's not as much to hold over the Maduro regime's head as far as potential or future sanctions or measures the United States or world community would take to usher him out? And is there a concern that it's reaching a static point, or there's a loss of momentum for the opposition or the Guaido presidency?
We're optimistic. I think we're up to, I think I've got the latest numbers, up to 54 countries have now recognized Juan Guaido as interim president. The humanitarian response global has been overwhelming. That's something we're going to continue to push. And we call, now is the time to act in support of democracy. We think momentum is good. We're going to continue to look at ways that we can support Venezuela's humanitarian needs on one side, and we're going to continue to ask other nations to do the same. There's been positive news recently of some Venezuelan military and security service personnel standing on the right side of history and recognizing Juan Guaido as interim president. So we're going to continue pushing.
Since you just mentioned the number again, Robert, 54, that's only about a quarter of the U.S. of countries in the world. Is that right?
If you know the number of countries, but we've gotten major support in the Western Hemisphere, and I would just point that out, as well as Europe. If we look at the democracies, we're doing pretty well as well. Okay. Michelle, all right.
Following on the secretary's visit, considering that the Israeli election is next month, a month from today, is it likely that he would go there before the election? Does that send some sort of a message?
No message. Israel's an ally. We're not going to get involved in domestic politics of another country. Please.
Okay. Let me just follow up on the embassy, please.
I'm going to go to Lali. I'm going to jump.
You're not going to get involved in domestic politics of another country when that country is Israel. What about Venezuela? Huh?
We're supporting the Venezuelan people and their constitutional. Lali, let's go. I'll come back to you. Okay, go ahead. You next, Lali, all right? One, two, very good. All right, go ahead, Saeed.
You closed the consulate in Jerusalem yesterday.
Right.
After 175 years of operation. But you're saying the decision was driven by our global efforts to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our diplomatic engagements and operations. Could you really explain what that means? What does that mean?
It means exactly what it says. We've got you know, this is an internal administrative decision about how we staff and organize our representation overseas, and that's exactly what it is.
That this is an internal administrative decision, but frankly, it's not. I won't try and argue the point with you here. I have a technical question about this. What happens to the building?
The building we continue to house and use. We have the Palestinian Affairs Unit is now stood up within that building, and
it will stay there. It's
correct. Fine. Correct.
So, in other words, this building will be used. It's going to be used for the same purpose as it was on last week. Mm-hmm. It's just going to have a different name. It won't be run by a consul general
correct.
Who reports directly back.
That's
to
correct. Okay. Chain of command now reports to the United States ambassador.
Is it going to become a resident for the American ambassador in Israel?
I don't have any information
because
on that.
Because we will report that.
Don't have. I promise.
Turkey?
Lali. Yeah, just go ahead.
Sorry. Thank you. I have two questions on South Asia, India, and Pakistan. What is U.S. assessment of the situation between the two countries now? And also, can you give us a sense or describe in detail what efforts the secretary himself made in calming the situation? He spoke to the two leaders in the India-Pakistan earlier this week, and he spoke about it yesterday too in Iowa.
Right, right. Our position, the position of the United States, is we continue to urge both sides to continue to take steps to de-escalate the situation, and that includes through direct communication. And we believe strongly that further military activity will exacerbate the situation. So we reiterate our call for Pakistan to abide by its United Nations Security Council commitments to deny terrorist sanctuary and to block their access to funds. Regarding your second question, this happened in Hanoi last week, actually. Secretary Pompeo led diplomatic engagement directly, and that played an essential role in de-escalating the tensions between the two sides. He spoke with leaders in both countries, and that included the Indian Minister of External Affairs, Swaraj, National Security Advisor, Doval, and Pakistani Foreign Minister, Qureshi. I'll stop there.
Okay.
Is there any follow-up? Is there a follow-up on that? I'm sorry, please go ahead.
So has he made any further calls since coming here after that?
He hasn't. But what I can say is we've been in continuous high-level contact has continued. That's with both governments via our embassies in New Delhi and Islamabad, as well as with the Indian and Pakistani embassies here in Washington. That has been sustained. That's been ongoing. And sometimes we do public diplomacy, and sometimes there's a time for private diplomacy. And there's a lot of private diplomacy that's going on right now.
One quick thing. India has on use of F-16 by Pakistan, State Department and the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad said it is looking for more information on that. Is there any potential misuse of F-16 by Pakistan? And what information you are seeking from?
So we've seen those reports, and we're following that issue very closely. I can't confirm anything, but as a matter of policy, we don't publicly comment on the contents of bilateral agreements that we have in this regard involving U.S. defense technologies, nor the communications that we have with other countries about that. So we're taking a look, and we're going to continue to take a look. And I'm going to leave it at that. Let's move on.
I'm going to go to
Michelle. That's why I already called on you. Let's go to Laurie. Let me go to Laurie. We'll try to get back.
Turkey's plans to purchase the S-400.
Well, how does that stand now, and what will you do if they go ahead with that?
Yeah. We've spoken about that before here, Lori, and position hasn't changed. We've long made it clear we would like to work collaboratively on air and missile defense with Turkey, and we have offered opportunities for Turkey to consider Patriot, among other systems, over the years. We've also made it clear to Turkey that we have very serious concerns with its stated plans to proceed with the acquisition of the Russian S-400 missile defense system. We've clearly warned Turkey that its potential acquisition of the S-400 will result in a reassessment of Turkey's participation in the F-35 program and risk other potential future arm transfers to Turkey, as well as lead to potential sanctions under Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, CATSA, upon any government entities, private industry, or individuals that are involved in such a transaction.
Again, if I could ask you about the latest on Syria, you're leaving, we understand. There'll be 400 U.S. troops that will remain in Syria after the departure, with additional forces from coalition members. Is that correct?
The White House has indicated those numbers, and I'll defer to the White House and Department of Defense on specifics, but what I will say is that a residual force of the United States military is going to remain in northeast Syria as part of a multinational force in order to prevent ISIS resurgence and to support stability and security in northeast Syria.
It means that there will be more troops from the international coalition that will join the U.S. forces?
We are, the drawdown is going to continue. As previously announced, it's going to be done in a deliberate and coordinated manner. And as we transition, we're going to continue to be working with our allies and partners to clear liberated areas, conduct targeted counterterrorism operations, and support stabilization efforts. As far as our priorities remain the same, and talks are ongoing with our allies about the future.
Multinational force.
Franco, follow up on that. Yeah.
When you say multinational force, what are the other nations? What pledges do you have for this force?
We're not going into details. Talks continue. We have nothing to announce.
You don't have any pledge to announce.
Go, please.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Question on Saudi Arabia. Given the case that was publicized this week of an American woman who, due to circumstances surrounding a divorce, is unable to leave Saudi Arabia, I wondered if the State Department has any concerns about the guardianship laws generally in Saudi Arabia and the effect it has on women there.
Just speaking generally about anytime an American travels overseas, they're, of course, subject to the laws of the country in which they travel, and we routinely encourage American citizens to make sure, to read what we publish and to understand the laws of the countries to which they're visiting. In the case of Saudi Arabia, as you point out, married women, including non-Saudis, require their husband's permission to depart the country, while unmarried women and children require the permission of their father or male guardian. So that's something that we work through.
Right. Can I ask one follow-up on that and another American?
With the International Women's Courage Award.
We continue to engage all countries on the issue of women and girls' rights, and that's something we speak forthrightly about.
Well, why can't you say it in this case about Saudi Arabia, unless it's not a concern with Saudi Arabia? All you're doing is warning American women who are married to Saudis that if they go there, they might not ever be able to leave. That doesn't sound like you're trying to change
the policy. We engage with the Saudi government and all nations on these issues. It's something that we do routinely in our diplomacy. It's something that we continue to stand up for, and something that is part of what we as the diplomatic corps do globally. I'll stop there. All right.
One follow-up question on that.
Let's do one North Korea. How about one North Korea?
Thank you very much.
All right, Lou Janish, you got a North Korea. Let's hear
Thank you very much. On United States and North Korea, yeah. Hanoi talks broke down in last week. What are the next steps in the United States? Is there any plan to have the next meeting with North Korea? United States have any planned next meeting with North Korea? What do you have the schedule?
Not yet.
But Pompeo said, Secretary Pompeo said there will be sent a special envoy to North Korea. Do you have any plans?
We have no travel to announce for Special Representative Biegun yet. We've just returned from that trip, and we're going to regroup, and we're going to drive forward.
Special Representative Biegun will meeting with the South Korean Representative Lee Do-hoon. Do you have anything on this? Because he's arriving.
I'm sorry, Jen. One more time. Can you say that again?
South Korean Representative Lee Do-hoon will meeting with the Special Representative Biegun. Today or tomorrow?
Will happen tomorrow.
Yes,
I can confirm that meeting will take place.
We will be talking about this issue.
Of course,
this is
his counterpart, and so there's very close coordination with the Republic of Korea on this.
No plans, right?
I'm sorry.
You don't have any plan to special. Envoy to send
at this point, I've got nothing to announce. No,
right,
absolutely not.
When you say that in the next couple weeks, he said I hope to have a team in Pyongyang headed over there in the next couple weeks.
He says hope, and we do hope. We want to move this forward. Absolutely. But I've got nothing to announce today. And the secretary is expressing where we want to go. We think we've made progress in Hanoi, and we're gonna operate from that.
So are you saying that there hasn't been State Department contact with any North Koreans since the summit?
I didn't say that, actually.
So what is the answer then? Has the U.S. been talking to the North Koreans since the summit?
I'm not gonna go into private diplomatic channels, but we remain, I would say as a general principle, we remain in regular contact with the North Koreans. And progress was made at the Hanoi summit. We did not reach an agreement. But at the same time, we were able to exchange very detailed positions, and that has narrowed the gap on a number of issues. And we've also made clear where the United States and the world stand regarding demilitarization.
You can't say whether there's been conversation by the State Department since the summit?
I'm not going to go into specifics on private discussions.
But that wouldn't be private. A yes or no.
We remain in regular contact with the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Please, yes.
Representative Biegun, will there also be a trilet with Japan this week included?
I can confirm that he's meeting with his Japanese counterpart tomorrow as well.
Tomorrow as well. Tomorrow. Thank you.
Please.
In Afghanistan, with these ongoing talks with the Taliban, and if the Taliban returns to government in Afghanistan.
Special Representative Khalilzad and his team are working to promote intra-Afghan talks through a national, unified, and inclusive Afghan negotiating team that includes opposition parties and representatives from civil society, particularly women and youth. And so our position is we're going to continue to support a peace process that aims to address the legitimate concerns of the Afghan people and sustains the social and economic gains of the last 17 years. And that means ensures a better future for all Afghans, particularly women and youth.
One question about Saudi back here.
A Saudi question.
A Saudi woman question.
Okay.
Two Virginia lawmakers have written to Secretary Pompeo asking him to raise the case of Aziza al-Yusuf, who's been in jail for almost a year, says she was tortured. She's a woman activist there. Wondered if the secretary has raised that case and also the case of the American man who says he was tortured in Saudi custody, the U.S. citizen.
And who is the Saudi man that you're referring to?
It's the Saudi American man who was in the Ritz-Carlton. New York Times profiled him this weekend.
Okay. Right. It's Waleed Fitahi is the gentleman's name, right?
Yeah.
Confirmed that he's detained in Saudi Arabia. Confirmed that we're providing him consular services, and that we have raised his case with the government of Saudi Arabia. We visited him today. We visited him on the 20th, and we have had consular access previously. We've raised and we continue to raise his case on a consistent basis with the Saudi government.
And anything you can tell us about his condition, since you've saw him today?
I have no updates on that regard, no.
And anything? And about the woman,
I don't have that in front of me today. I'm sorry, I just don't want to misspeak on that issue. But I would say I don't have the facts of that case, so I don't want to misspeak, Michelle. All right, please.
Do you have anything on this?
I'm sorry,
Congress,
Michelle.
Is considering sanctions on Saudi Arabia.
We don't preview, sanctions, and I've got nothing to announce in that regard. All right,
Robert,
last question. We're going to wrap it up, and I'm going to try you, please.
Okay, senators had a closed-door briefing yesterday with a senior State Department official, and Lindsey Graham said it was a waste of time. Mitt Romney said he learned nothing new. If senators learned nothing new, what was the point of the briefing? And the other question really quickly on Israel. Israel's prime minister is facing indictments. I know you said you don't get involved in domestic issues, but how does that and does it affect the administration's peace plan?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on the second question. Israel is an ally. We deal with the government of Israel, and that's the way we pursue our own interests as the United States of America. We take countries as we find them. Regarding your first question, that was a closed-door session, and I'm not going to, attempt to read out what was briefed, and I'm certainly not going to react to, members, our elected representatives. I'm not going to do that from the State Department. We continue to regularly engage the United States Congress on these issues and to provide information. Our position has not changed. We continue to gather facts. We'll follow them where they lead and to hold those responsible.
Including the Crown Prince?
We have repeatedly said that we will follow the facts where they lead and hold those who are responsible. And with that, I'm going to stop. Guys, thank you very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.